Weary of towns, Nathan set out, planning to stay clear of Dodge City. In the distance, he heard the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe train headed west, bound for Dodge.
Yeah!
Nathan shook his Winchester from the boot and kicked the Grulla into a fast gallop. Soon he could see the dirty gray of smoke against the blue of the sky. The train stood idle. Smoke billowed from the blown express car, while the engineer and fireman stood beside the locomotive, their hands in the air. A lone gunman held them captive, and while Nathan wasn't quite within range, he cut loose with his Winchester. It had the desired effect, drawing the attention of the outlaw, and the trainmen were on him in an instant. But the shot alerted the rest of the robbers, and some of them bellied down under the wrecked baggage car. Nathan reined up and left the saddle, using each bit of cover to advance. Near the far end of the train, he could see a rider coming, trailing 9 horses on lead ropes. He took careful aim. The rider flew out of the saddle. The additional shots spooked the horses. The outlaws saw their means of escape galloping away. Nathan now had the advantage. While he was outnumbered, his adversaries had virtually no cover. They couldn't retreat into the baggage car, for the fireman and engineer had retrieved their weapons and were adding to the woes of the train robbers. Finally, they tried to scramble under and behind the baggage car, putting it between themselves and Nathan. Nathan crawled closer and used some of the debris from the baggage car for cover, cutting loose on the retreating outlaws. He brought down 2 more before they were out of range. Nathan noted with approval that the engineer and fireman were binding the captured outlaw hand and foot. Finished, they came to meet him, grins on their grimy faces.
By God, one cowboy in the brush is better than 2 Pinkertons in the baggage car.
We better go have a look at them.
There were 2 trainmen in the baggage car.
We drove them away!
We hell! You didn't fire a shot till they was on the run, and it was you that said they wouldn't dynamite the express car. They was gonna blow the safe, too, if this gent with the Winchester hadn't took a hand.
Well, they got nothing, then?
Nothing. We're owing you, Mr.
Stone. Nathan Stone.
Well, I know you. The Kansas Pacific would have been a gone beaver if you hadn't wiped out that band of thieves.
My God, I just wish the AT&SF had the gumption to hire you.
You have some track that needs fixing. We can't be more than a few miles from Dodge. Your dispatcher there should be able to get a repair crew out here pronto. I can ride that way and take him word.
You tell him he'd better. We ain't setting out here after dark with a busted open express coach and a safe full of government payroll. I'll put this old iron horse in reverse and back her all the way up to Wichita.
Nathan rode west, following the tracks. Reaching Dodge, he rode to the railroad depot, where he told the dispatcher of the attempted robbery and the torn-up track.
Nathan!
Sheriff Harrington.
I'll buy you supper if you tell me how you finally got that Limbaugh filly off your back.
On one condition. You'll have to feed my dog, too.
That might be a powerful condition. When was the last time he's fed?
Best I recollect, it was the fall of 66, just before we came west.
Nathan spent almost 2 hours with Harrington and ended up telling the lawman not only of the Limbaugh trial in Kansas City, but of the train robbery he had thwarted.
You're missing your calling. Whew. Thieves are giving the railroads hell. You can name your own price just doing what you did today. Locking Pinkertons in the baggage car with the payroll will accomplish just one thing. The varmints will dynamite the coach like they did today. You and your horse traveling in a boxcar near the end of the train can stop these train robbers cold.
That's something to consider. But for now, I have another trail to ride down into New Mexico territory. A debt I have to pay for a friend.
I understand. You ever decide you'd like to ride shotgun for the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe? Division boss is right here in Dodge. I'll make sure he hears that you saved him a payroll.
Leaving Dodge, Nathan rode southwest toward northeastern New Mexico territory. Dusk had begun to fall as Nathan approached the Cimarron, when he discovered wagon tracks. There were 3 heavily loaded wagons. And on the flat Kansas plain, he could see where they had crossed the Cimarron and veered south. There were tracks of at least 9 horses, and the wagons were drawn by mules instead of oxen, which meant that somebody was in a hurry.
Must be a valuable load, Cotton Blossom, with 9 men riding shotgun. They could have used the railroad as far west as Dodge, unless they're involved in some scheme that can't stand the light of day. As it is, they've likely come all the way from St. Louis or Kansas City, keeping to the plains and avoiding towns. That's a hell of a lot of extra work for honest bullwhackers.
Crossing the Cimarron, Nathan found where the party had made camp the night before. From the tracks, Nathan decided the wagons weren't more than 2 hours ahead of him. While common sense told him to avoid the mysterious caravan, his curiosity was prodding him to follow, to discover who these people were and what they were hauling. He rode on, but cautiously. His very presence could be taken as a threat. When he sighted the wagons, 2 of them were on the farther side of a dry arroyo, while the 3rd was stalled midway. The left rear wheel was missing, and 4 men were using a pole to hoist the rear of the wagon. 2 men were stacking large flat stones beneath the axle of the disabled wagon. 6 of the men were unoccupied, and when one of them saw Nathan, he alerted the others.
Hey!
2 of them reached in through the canvas pucker of the wagon and came out with Winchesters, while the others waited, their hands near the butts of their colts.
I'm friendly.
Come on, then. Keep your hands up and empty.
Nathan reined up a few yards from the crippled wagon. If this bunch took offense and challenged his right to be there, then it would confirm his suspicions of them. One of the men with a Winchester eyed him with suspicion.
Hey, you been following us. Why?
You talk like a man with a guilty conscience. I rode out of Dodge City this morning, and I crossed the Cimarron where you did. Till I saw your tracks, I didn't know you existed.
You got a smart mouth, mister. I'll give any fool the benefit of the doubt once. Now you ride on and keep riding. Show your face again, and you'll be left for coyote and buzzard bait.
The bunch looked rattlesnake mean, and while Nathan had no doubt that whatever activity they were engaged in was illegal enough to hang them to the last man, his becoming involved would only succeed in getting him shot dead. He rode carefully around the wagon and might have escaped them had they not left their mules in harness. As Cotton Blossom followed Nathan, one of the mules drew the wrong impression and cow-kicking narrowly missed the dog. The hound reacted and the mule spooked. The wagon shot out of the arroyo, and when the wheelless axle struck an upthrust of rock, the load shifted. Heavy wooden crates were flung to the ground. These crates were marked Winchester, and while that was damning enough, some of the crates split, revealing brand new Model 73s. The implication of what he'd seen struck Nathan with the impact of a club, and he kicked the Gruya into a fast gallop. But he could hear the renegades thundering after him, and it was just a matter of time until they rode him down. They were shooting, and lead sang dangerously close. He reined up. They still might gun him down, but at least he had a chance. To run would be to die. Turning his horse, he faced them, giving up any thought of resisting. There were 6 of them, and they all had him covered.
Unfasten that gun belt and do it slow. Then let it fall. Wilson, gather up that gun rig. Dismount. Start walking toward the wagons.
Nathan started walking, noting that 2 of the men were leading his horses. He had no doubt as to what they planned to do with him, the only question being when and how. A rider to his right buffaloed him with the muzzle of a Colt. His hat saved him, and while his head hurt like blazes, he was conscious. Face down, he lay still. Moving would invite another blow, and they might crack his skull. He listened.
Hell, why didn't you just shoot him?
Because out here on the open plain, a shot can be heard for 20 miles. We're likely to be stuck here for a while, and the last damn thing we need is to invite any more attention.
Well, this Peckerwood said he just came from Dodge. One of us could ride there and buy another wagon.
God, Wilson, was you born that stupid, or did you go to school and study for it? You'd have to take the teams with you, and you'd have the town following you back, hoping to learn how a man can lose a wagon, wheels, box, bows, and canvas on flat Kansas plain.
Well, hell, it was just an idea. You get a better one?
Shut up, the both of you. And we should have brought our 4th wagon, reducing each load instead of overloading 3. The terrain south of the Canadian River is likely to become even rougher, And even if these remaining wagons can make it, can we afford to leave a third of our cargo behind?
Hell no.
Then listen to me. We promised Quanta Parker and its Comanches 432 repeating rifles and 200 rounds for each. And we promised delivery on the north bank of the Canadian. Now there's no way in hell we can live up to our end of the deal because we got no way to get the Winchesters there. There ain't but one damn thing we can do, and that's to persuade the war whoops to come here for their guns.
Well, that's near 100 miles. Suppose they won't come.
We'll sweeten the pot. Instead of $100 per rifle, we'll take 75. And then there's 4 cases of dynamite. Why get your ears shot off trying to breach the walls of a soldier fort when you can just wait in the darkness and blow it up?
By God, Burke, you can't be beat when it comes to figuring things out.
Just keep that in mind, all of you. We're still a week away from our rendezvous with Quanta. And if they agree to come here for the rifles, that's another 2 days. At best, you'll be stuck here 9 days. Gather all the rifles and ammunition from that ruined wagon and then divide it between the other two. It's maybe 2 miles back to the Cimarron, and you can make it that far even with the overloaded wagons. I'll be back as soon as I can.
What are we supposed to do with this Pilato here on the ground?
Rope him to the wagon wheel. He might be useful as a hostage if the others come nosing around. If we haven't found a use for him by the time I return, we'll burn the wagons, and he'll be in one of them. Quanta and his boys can take the blame for that. Now get busy gathering those cases of rifles and ammunition. I want to see all of it in the 2 remaining wagons before I ride out.
Get up, you.
On hands and knees, Nathan pretended he was barely conscious. Despite his throbbing head, he was elated, for he might yet escape. He allowed McCluskey to hoist him to his feet and shove him toward one of the wagons.
Now, get down there with that wheel to your back.
Nathan sat down, his back to the wagon wheel, and McCluskey bound his hands behind him to the rim. Nathan could have shouted for joy, for instead of rope, the gunrunner was using heavy cord.
You ain't going nowheres anytime soon.
After McCluskey had knotted the cord tight and left him alone, Nathan ran his fingers along the wagon wheel's iron rim. As he had hoped, the continual pounding of the iron against the rock had left jagged burrs sharp enough to cut his skin, or his bonds.
Now, take your time getting these wagons back to the Cimarron. Hide them in the brush along the river as best you can, and post a guard at each wagon from dusk to first light. If I ride back here and find that anything has happened to the teams, to either of the wagons or to the rifles and ammunition, the hombre responsible will be almighty sorry.
Burke rode away, and the others began readying the wagons for the drive back to the Cimarron.
Come on, there's some brush over there. Let's get the wagons moving.
McCluskey loosed Nathan from the wagon wheel, but left his hands tied behind his back, forcing him to follow the wagons afoot. With Burke's order in mind, both wagons were driven into heavy brush along the river. McCluskey forced Nathan down, his back to the wagon wheel, and tied him as before. Nathan's bonds were loosed long enough for him to eat, then he was bound again. He could see the horses and mules, his animals among them, grazing on the opposite side of the river, apparently unguarded. His saddle and pack saddle lay beneath the wagon to which he was tied, and he had seen Burke throw his gun rig into the back of the wagon. When the camp settled down for the night, Nathan Stone would be ready. After supper, Nathan listened to the men talk and decided they were more than just a band of renegades. Burke, the man who had ridden to meet Quanta Parker, obviously had connections and power. How else could he have negotiated a deal with a Comanche chief and raised the money for 3 wagon loads of weapons and ammunition? With more than 400 repeating rifles in the hands of the Comanches, they would be able to wreak havoc on the Union Army. Somehow, these weapons must be kept away from Quanta Parker. Nathan considered the possibility of riding back to Fort Dodge and laying the situation at the feet of the Union Army, where it belonged. But the new post commander at Fort Dodge would be unlikely to send soldiers anywhere upon the word of a civilian. Byron Silver, associated with the Attorney General's office in Washington, would take Nathan's word, but Silver might not be in Washington. If the Winchesters and ammunition were to be kept out of Comanche hands, the responsibility was Nathan Stone's. He began sawing the cords that bound his wrists against the ragged edge of the wheel's iron tire, feeling the sharp burrs bite into his hands and wrists. A guard sat on the tongue of each wagon, and Nathan had to be careful lest his movements vibrate the wagon enough to disturb the guard. By the time Nathan had sawed his way through a third of his bonds, the blood from his many cuts had slicked his hands. The moon came up and set. Nathan heard someone coming and ceased his activity until a new guard had settled down. Free of his bonds, Nathan rubbed his arms and wrists. He crept away from the wagons and toward the horses and mules, moving slowly so as not to interrupt the grazing. Catching up his own horses, with an arm around the neck of each of the animals, he led them upriver far enough so that any disturbance wouldn't spook them. Nathan found a dead, thorny branch, and he took it to where the horses and mules grazed. Mules being the easiest to spook, he swatted two of the animals with the thorny branch. Another swipe or two with the branch had every horse and mule on the run, hell-bent for election, down the Cimarron. Reaction within the camp was predictable.
By God, something spooked the horses and mules.
Your fault, McCluskey. That drifter you tied to the wagon wheel got loose. Now he took his horses and run off the rest. After him, damn it. Burke'll gut shoot us all.
Reaching the first wagon, the first thing Nathan touched was a tangle of fuse. Some of the dynamite had spilled out of the broken box. While he had no experience with the explosive, he had seen it capped and fused during his months with the Kansas Pacific Railroad. With his knife, he slashed off a 5-minute length of fuse. He capped and fused one stick, binding it to a second stick. Quickly, he prepared a charge for the second wagon. Lighting the first fuse, he ran to the second wagon and repeated the procedure. Nathan set out upriver, leading his horses. A fleeting shadow ahead of him proved to be Cotton Blossom. Nathan mounted the Gruya, kicking the animal into a fast gallop. His mind had become a ticking clock, and he gritted his teeth in anticipation of the explosions. As the cases of ammunition detonated on the heels of the dynamite, there was a conflagration such as Nathan Stone had never witnessed in his life. One after another, balls of flame shot into the heavens. It seemed the earth had been painted an eerie orange, and Nathan had to fight to hold his skittish horses. There was no doubt that the explosions and fire had been seen in Dodge, Wichita, parts of Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas. Looking back, Nathan could see a fiery halo, likely a prairie fire, which he regretted, but there'd been no other way. Nathan wondered what would be the fate of the men who planned to sell guns and ammunition to Quantum Parker. For certain, those men who had survived the blasts wouldn't be around when Burke returned.
Well, Cotton Blossom, I reckon it'll be a real test of old Burke's negotiating skills when he brings them 400 Comanches on a 2-day ride for guns and shells that don't exist. From what I hear, Comanches have scalped a man and shot his belly full of arrows for a whole lot less.
Dodge City, Kansas, August 18th, 1873. Byron Silver arrived just before dark with orders from Washington to the commander at Fort Dodge. While changing trains in Kansas City, Silver had heard about the Limbaugh trial. He had gotten the story from Joel Netherton, who had been able to tell him only that Nathan Stone had ridden west. With that in mind, Silver went to the sheriff's office to inquire about Nathan.
He left here early this morning, riding south.
He's a longtime friend. I'd have liked to see him again.
Buy him a supper. I'll tell you how that Limbaugh gal tried to shoot him right here in Dodge.
Maybe I will. Is Stone a friend of yours?
Well, I'd like to think so. It was me that checked out the Limbaugh story and proved her a liar, sending Stone to the Attorney General's office in Jefferson City.
Well, come on then, and let's have a steak.
It was already dark when Silver and Harrington left the sheriff's office, and following supper they lingered over coffee. They had just left the cafe when they felt the earth shake.
God almighty! An earthquake!
An explosion! Look over to the south!
They watched in wonder as an enormous ball of fire erupted into the heavens.
What in thunder could have caused that? Not a damn thing out there but sagebrush, tumbleweeds, and flat prairie. And of course, the Cimarron River if you ride far enough.
I can think of only one possible cause, and if I'm right, My reason for being here has just been eliminated. Tomorrow, I'll take some soldiers from Fort Dodge and ride south.
Respecting Silver's position, Sheriff Harrington asked no questions. The Cimarron, August 19, 1873. Accompanied by a sergeant and four privates, Byron Silver reached the Cimarron just before noon.
Looky there.
Nobody had any difficulty identifying any of the debris from the explosions.
Winchester rifles, Sergeant. Well, at least they used to be.
Riding on, they found the remains of three men, five mules, and two horses. At the scene of the explosions, there was nothing but enormous craters in the ground. Half a mile south, there was an iron tire from a wagon wheel.
Assuming that somebody escaped, let's fan out and look for tracks.
Silver rode on upriver, not sure what he was seeking. Near a small tree, he found horse droppings, not quite a day old. In the wet sand at the water's edge, he saw the front paw prints of a wolf or a coyote, or of a dog. Silver rode south until he crossed the trail he sought. They were tracks of two horses and the paw prints of a dog. Silver paused, his eyes turned toward the southwest.
Vaya con Dios, Nathan Stone. I don't know the why of it, but your reckoning and sense of responsibility were ace high, amigo.
Santa Fe, New Mexico Territory, August 25th, 1873. Nathan followed the old Santa Fe trail. He took a room for the night and bought a local newspaper, the New Mexican. Most of the front section was devoted to local news, but there was one item about a growing resentment between sheepmen and cattlemen. A Spaniard, Armijo Estrella, was running sheep, while a crusty old ex-Texan, Colton McLean, had cattle. According to the paper, the two had been at each other's throats for years, fighting over range, water rights, and apparently just for the hell of it. Now McLean's riders were shooting at sheepmen, while Estrella's sheepmen were firing at cowboys. Estrella had been the first to bring in hired guns, and Nathan sat straight up on the bed, for there before him were the names of the Horrells. Much of the fighting had taken place near the little town of Lincoln in southern New Mexico Territory. He read the article a second time, and then scanned the rest of the paper without finding any mention of Clint Barkley. He might bring down the wrath of the entire Harrell clan without finding a trace of Barkley, but he had no other lead. Lincoln, New Mexico Territory, August 30th, 1873. Nathan wasted no time. He rode directly to Colton McLean's spread and found it to be all that he'd expected. Riding down a winding lane for more than a mile, he reined up at a gate behind which stood two men with Winchesters.
Who are you and what's your business?
Nathan Stone. I heard Mr. McLean might be hiring hands.
He might be. Follow Jake on up to the house.
Yeah.
Nathan stood beside his horses while Jake entered the house.
He'll see you. Door at the end of the hall.
Come on in.
McLean stood before a fireplace that used up half of one wall in the massive living room. His was the rough clothing of a cowboy. He hadn't removed his hat, and on his left hip was a tied-down colt.
Who told you I was hiring riders?
You'd be a fool not to. Armijo Estrella's hiring.
Well, now, maybe you ought to be talking to Armijo.
Maybe I ought to.
Nathan took a step toward the door.
15 pound and I supply your shells. Jake, show him to the bunkhouse.
Don't push your luck, mister. Mr. McLean don't take no lip. He'll talk to you after supper.
The dining room had benches and tables enough to seat 30 men, but there was only McLean, Nathan, and the Mexican cook.
Sit. The mix here is squid. He's the best cook that ever drawed a breath, but he ain't worth a damn for nothing else. Eat, damn it. Steak's getting cold. What do you think of the spread?
I think if I was having gun trouble, I'd have kept some armed men in the bunkhouse.
What the hell for? I'm here and two of the boys are at the gate. How much sand do you think a sheep herder has got anyhow?
I see the Harrell clan's hired on with Estrella, and I happen to know they're a bunch of Texas killers on the dodge.
Are you after them? Is that why you're here?
No, I'm not gunning for the Harrells. I just happen to know they're a hairy-legged bunch who've worn out their welcome in Texas. If they're around long enough, some of them will have to be shot on general principles.
You talk like a Texan.
I've spent some time there. What do you aim for me to do?
Take your turn riding the range. You don't shoot at the strays riders unless they fire at you or try to stampede the herd. You don't bother the sheep unless the varmints are run on my range. Then, by God, you rimrock every damn one.
The stray is trying to take land that belongs to you?
Well, hell, I ain't exactly got the papers on it, but my cows was grazing that land when this damn Spanish palato was on the south side of the river eating chili beans.
Estrella's calling your bluff, challenging your right to free range, then.
You're talking like them slick-tongued lawyers in Santa Fe.
You're defying the courts?
Hell yes. I took this land from the Indians when there was one of them varmints behind every tree and bush. You think I aim to lose it to this shirt-tailed sheep nurse without a fight?
I understand your position. Have you considered leasing the land from the government?
100,000 acres and more at $1 an acre. If I sold every damn cow I own at prime, I couldn't afford that. And neither can Estrella. There ain't that much cold cash and all in New Mexico territory.
So the answer is a shooting war between the sheepmen and the cattlemen.
I reckon. The law says Estrella's got the same right to free range as I do. But it don't give him the right to get at the grass by shooting my riders and stampeding my cows.
Well, the same law denies you the right to claim free range by gunning down Estrella's riders and rimrocking his sheep.
By God, I've had the law read to me backward and forward, and I ain't about to have it done by a varmint I'm paying gun wages. If you ain't with me, then you're agin me. Saddle up and ride, before I lose my temper.
Well, I didn't say I was against you. I want to know where I stand, where the law's concerned. I'll side you as long as I eat your grub and take your pay, but I won't kill without cause. As I see it, you and our Mio Estrella are both outside the law, and you have the right to defend your herd and to retaliate as a result of attacks on your riders. If it comes to bushwhacking and backshooting, then I'll ride on. I won't end up with the price on my head just so your cows can eat free grass. Comprende?
Si.
Now, what do you know about this Harrell bunch that's hired on with Estrella?
They're trigger happy. There's 5 of the varmints. Last Sunday, they got drunk and shot up a saloon in Lincoln. They threatened to shoot the sheriff and the deputy if anything was done.
So nothing was done?
Not a damn thing. I halfway believe Estrella's encouraging them to raise hell, giving me notice that I'm in for it. But these Harrells ain't the worst of it. I'd say Estrella's got 12 Mexicanos he's brung across the river. Every one wearing a tied-down colt and the look of a killer.
It purely sounds like a challenge. How many riders do you have?
Well, you've seen them. There's Hugh and Vance at the gate, the 9 men who rode into town, and you. 12. So you're outgunned.
Maybe not for long. Dispose of the Harrells and the odds are even.
But you're not after them.
No, but once they know I'm here, they'll be after me. I interfered in a fracas back in Texas when they were shooting up a town and about to kill an innocent man. I wounded one and sent them all running with their tails between their legs. They're not likely to forget that.
These Harrells can't do nothing but help me. Another hell-raising day or two in Lincoln, and Sheriff Bowie Hatcher won't care a damn what we do. Since that bunch of coyotes has got a mad on for you, I reckon we'll keep you close to home for a spell. The more mischief they stir up, the less favorable the law's going to look on our Mijo Estrella.
But things didn't work out the way Colton McLean had hoped. A few minutes before midnight, one of Colton's riders charged into the ranch on a lathered horse with news that the Harrells had bushwhacked 4 McLean riders in the Rio Saloon. McLean thundered into the bunkhouse.
Riders just come from town. The bastards bushwhacked him, killing Sandy. Gus and Willis still hold up in the Rio there, and I reckon the varmints has got more of our boys pinned down. Riley's the only one who got away. He shucked it out the back door. Stone, saddle up and ride. Take Hugh and Vance with you. Whatever you have to do, do it.
Well, leave Hugh and Vance to cover the ranch.
Well, I'm not staying here with our boys pinned down in the saloon.
By God, I'm giving the orders. Take Hugh and Vance with you. I'll be here and Riley can shoot. So can Squid if he's got to. Now ride, damn it!
Lincoln, New Mexico Territory, August 31st, 1873.
Yeah, we're just Chi-Town. We don't know what we're buying into. A man on a horse is a prime target, even in the dark.
That's Rio.
He likely got the back door covered by now.
Then we'll uncover it.
As they came up behind the Rio Saloon, one of Estrella's gunmen was pouring lead in through the open back door.
Got him.
Get in there, both of you. I'll cover you while you bring out Gus and Will. Move, damn it! Whoever's covering the front knows something's wrong back here.
Hugh and Vance were barely through the back door when Nathan saw a shadow creep slowly toward the rear of the saloon. Nathan waited, daring not to miss, for his shot would reveal his own position. As a slug whipped over Nathan's head, he returned fire, aiming for the muzzle flash. There was no response. Hugh and Vance hustled Gus and Will out of the saloon.
Gus and Will's been bloodied up some, but their vitals ain't hurt. They're going with us and liberate the rest of the outfit.
Two down. The varmint shooting from the front got nosy.
The rest of the Sidewinders has got Joel Tobin Quad trapped somewhere. Let's slip in behind and give them hell.
God, they're holed up in the Rio de Oro dance hall. There's women likely in the line of fire.
But the varmints we want are outside. We'll move in behind them and shoot at their muzzle flashes. Make every shot count. After the first, you're as much a target as they are.
They moved toward the dance hall, fanning out. Firing from within the dance hall was all but drowned out by the roar of the guns of the Harrell gang outside.
You McLean cownurses has got 5 minutes to come out. You don't, and we douse the place with coal oil and burn you out.
Since the attackers ceased firing, there were no muzzle flashes for Nathan and the McLean riders to fire at.
Damn! We'll have to wait for them to make the first move because we don't know where they are.
It's time for them to learn the rest of the McLean outfit is here. Get ready to fire.
No, damn it. There's likely a dozen of these varmints, and our boys inside won't be no help to us. Hell, we can't surprise them if they know we're here.
If they know we're here, they'll cut down on us, and we'll have some targets. After they fired the dance hall, what's to stop them from standing us off while our boys inside are burned to cinders? By God, use your head.
He's talking sense. Get your guns ready. Challenge him, Stone.
You Estrella varmints are surrounded! We're the McLean outfit, and we're ordering you to drop your guns. Make any move to fire the building.
Nathan's plan worked to perfection as Estrella's riders cut loose with their guns. Nathan, Vance, Hugh, Tobe, and Gus laid down a deadly fusillade, firing at muzzle flashes. When the McLean riders inside the dance hall understood what was happening, they began firing, catching Estrella's men in a crossfire.
To the horses! Get to the horses and ride!
Those who were able to reach their horses galloped away.
You McLean riders, this is the rest of the outfit. Are you hurt?
This is Tobe. Joel, Quad, and me's bloodied up some, but we're alive. We're coming out.
As they emerged, Sheriff Bowie Hatcher arrived, lantern in hand.
Now just who the hell kicked off this fracas?
Why don't you start an investigation and figure it out?
By God, I've had a belly full of you mouthy McLean riders. Come Monday, I'm telegraphing Santa Fe for a U.S. Marshal.
Hatcher, them damn Estrella riders cut down on us without cause. Sandy Bigler is laying outside the Rio Saloon with a bullet hole in his skull. If you don't saddle up and go after them coyotes for murder, then I reckon Mr. McLean will want to know why. It'll be a good question for him to ask your U.S. Marshal when he shows up.
You expect a lot of one man.
The U.S. Marshal won't be but one man.
Sheriff, we're taking no responsibility for anything that happened here tonight. We defended ourselves in our outfit, and we'll do it again. Now let's ride back to the ranch, because we may be needed there.
Yeah, by God. It'd be just like the bastards to try and burn us out.
Those of you that needs patching up, have it done. Since the sheriff is providing a lantern, I aim to see if we salted down any of those coyotes.
I ain't been hit. I'm coming with you. I'd like to see some of them varmints with blood leaking out.
No more than me.
Just a damn minute. This is law business.
So was the gunfight that got one of our boys killed, and most of the others shot up. Where the hell was you when we could have used your help?
They circled the dance hall and found three bodies, all of them Mexicano. Nathan was disappointed, but not surprised that none of the Harrells had been killed. They were the kind to fight when they had the advantage, to run when the odds tilted the other way. Hugh and Vance roped Sandy across his saddle, and they all rode back to McLean's spread. When the outfit reached the house, McLean and Squid stood on the porch with Winchesters.
How bad?
Sandy's dead. Rest of us got shot up some, but we'll heal.
Riley tells me they laid an ambush and gunned down Sandy without cause.
They done that. Gus and me, we was right behind him when he stepped out of the door of the Rio Saloon. Sandy didn't have a chance.
Stone, when Riley brought me word, I sent you, Vance, and Hugh back to town. Tell me what happened from the time the three of you arrived until the end of it.
Nathan knew McLean was testing him, and he supplied only the facts without exalting himself. McLean's eyes were not on Nathan, but on the faces of the rest of the cowboys who had been with him. Nathan Stone had taken command. Estrella's killers gunned down Sandy, and five of them had paid with their lives. This was the kind of vengeance Colton McLean understood.
You've all done what you had to do, and you've done it well. It's Sunday, not more than 3 hours from daylight. We'll have breakfast at 8, and we'll lay Sandy away.
By God, you ain't letting them bastards get away with this, are you?
I can't see they got away with nothing. They started a fight and we finished it. We lost one man, but they lost five. They're likely bellied down with their Winchesters waiting for us, but we're not riding into their trap. As it stands, they wronged us, and we're guilty of nothing more than defending ourselves. I aim to keep it that way as long as I can.
You work fast, bucko. You rode in yesterday, and already the old man's talking to you and down to the rest of us. Hugh or me could have told him what happened in town.
I agree, but he didn't ask you. He asked me, and I told him.
Damn it, Vance, back off. He told it straight, giving us credit as an outfit. You was going to stand there and let Estrella's gunhawks burn that dance hall. Now you got a mad on because Stone challenged him and forced a shootout.
So that's how it was. Me and Joel and Quad was in there, and we'd have been fried alive. We're obliged, Stone.
There was no disagreement. We fired together.
Vance glared at Nathan. Nobody said anything more, but Vance's comrades looked on him with disfavor, and Nathan knew it wasn't over. After they buried Sandy, McLean addressed his men.
Coming out on the short end of that shootout last night, I looked for Estrella to try and get even, but not by attacking the herd. We'll graze him as close in as we can, and avoid losing any more riders in ambush situations because of the herd.
Hell, they'll scatter the herd from here to yonder.
Maybe, but I want every one of you to keep this in mind. We're dealing with bushwhackers, and attacks on the cattle are a means of luring some of you within rifle range. They'll use the cattle to trap you, to keep you always on the defensive. Wars are never won that way. You must choose your own ground. We'll fight, but we'll do it on our terms, not theirs.
I like that.
It's the way wars are won. Keep your enemy on the defensive.
That's what we done last night. We forced them to fight on our terms.
Vance didn't like the favorable manner in which Nathan Stone was being accepted, nor did he like McLean's reluctance to take the fight directly to Armijo Estrella's sheep camp. Nathan Stone didn't walk on water, and eventually he would draw a bad hand. Lincoln, New Mexico Territory, September 20th, 1873. Following the gunfight in Lincoln, in which Sandy had been killed, McLean split the outfit insofar as trips to town were concerned. Four of the riders were allowed to go on Saturday night, while the remaining five rode in on Sunday night. No longer did they enter or leave saloons by the front door, and they stayed together when entering or leaving any establishment. Nathan, Jake, Will, and Tobe were in town heading for the Rio Saloon. As they entered through the back door, Nathan froze, for Ben and Martin Harrell stood at the bar. The Harrells turned, their hands hovering over the butts of their colts. There was no mistaking the recognition in their eyes.
We'll move out of either you and you're dead.
So you're the bully puss that's siding McLean's cow nurses.
I'm tempted to call you Harrell's skunk stripe back-shooting sheep men, but that's too good for you. An egg-sucking dog would shy away from you low-down varmints.
You ain't prodding us into drawing again, you Stone. We heard you a man-killer. We'll choose our time.
I'll be careful not to turn my back on you.
Come on, Ben. I don't like the air in here no more.
I reckon you know them varmints from somewhere?
Texas. An outlaw relation of theirs backshot a good friend of mine.
I'd not be surprised if that outlaw relation followed them here.
I'm hoping he has, but he's not a Harrell. His handle's Clint Barkley, or Bill Bowen. But I'll know the no-account coyote when I see him.
All these sidewinders goes by the name of Harrell. There's the two that just slunk out of here, Ben and Martin. And the others is Samuel, Thomas, and William.
William? I never heard of him. He could be Barkley.
Well, they look related. Like they was all cut out of the same cloth.
The next night, all hell busted loose, and all because Vance didn't obey Colton McLean's orders. On Sunday afternoon, Hugh, Vance, Riley, Joel, and Tobe headed for town. Relaxing in the saloon, they weren't quite finished supper when Martin, Benjamin, Samuel, and Thomas Harrell walked in and took a table.
Well, by God, there's enough sheep stink in here. Gag a flock of buzzards.
Vance, shut up.
You ain't my daddy. There's four of us and four of them. Ain't you man enough to shear at least one of these woolly varmints?
The Harrells seemed not to hear. They left the cafe without a fight.
Damn you, Vance. The old man told us not to start anything. Shoot off your mouth one more time and I'm riding back to the ranch.
I'll go with you.
It's like McLean said. We don't know that the whole damn lot of Estrella's gun throwers ain't holed up here somewhere.
Hell, you see who's here.
We saw the Harrells in the cafe. We don't know who else is around. Lincoln being a small town, there was little to do when a man grew tired of the four or five saloons. The Rainbow Dance Hall offered some variety, for there were women. The place also had a bar and several billiard tables, and the McLean boys were there when the Harrells arrived.
Damn! Them sheep stink Harrells is here.
Vance's companion silenced him with murderous looks. The Harrells made their way to the bar, apparently ignoring the four McLean riders. Hugh and Tobe led the way to an empty billiard table. Riley racked the balls. Despite the apparent calm, trouble was brewing. As Vance leaned across the table for a long shot, a hard-flung empty bottle struck him in the back of the head.
Oh!
After that, it was Katie bar the door as the remaining McLean riders entered the fray. Billiard balls bounced off heads, shattered lamp globes and whiskey bottles behind the bar. The McLean riders, swinging billiard cues, were advancing to meet the Harrells. All eyes turned to the small man with the very large shotgun.
The next load of buckshot goes right in amongst you varmints. You ain't busting up my place. I don't care a damn if you kill one another, but do it outside. Now get!
Being nearest the door, the Harrells left first. The McLean riders, as had become their habit, left by the back door.
Them damn Harrells!
Drawing his Colt, Vance lit out in a run toward the position from which the shot had come. But the Harrells were not the problem. From across the street, four Winchesters cut loose and Vance died on his feet. Hugh, Riley, and Tobe scrambled back into the dance hall, slamming the door shut behind them.
Them damn Harrells set us up.
Vance walked right into it. The varmints can keep us hunkering in here the rest of the night.
That's what you think! I want the lot of you out of here, and by God, don't come back!
Mister, I'd rather face one shotgun in here than four Winchesters out there. We're staying right here until it's safe to leave.
Sheriff Bowie Hatcher elbowed his way through the crowd.
Can't you... damn fool spent one night in town without trying to kill one another.
It wasn't us that done the killing, Sheriff. Vance is lying outside, gunned down in another ambush by them damn sheepmen. What are you aiming to do about it?
I've telegraphed Santa Fe for a U.S. Marshal. Hell, I ain't standing alone in the middle with killers on both sides.
You're a county sheriff, and this is Lincoln County.
A county sheriff ain't responsible for a range war with killers being brought in from everywhere.
Sheriff, I want this bunch out of here.
Bushwhackers don't stick around after the first volley. I'll side you boys until you get your horses and load up the dead man.
Hearing the men return so early, McLean's suspicions were aroused. He was on the porch waiting as they reined in. Even in the dim starlight, the grim burden roped across a saddle told its own story.
Damn it! I've bent just about as far as I aim to. Tote Vance into the parlor. We'll bury him come first light. And after breakfast, we'll talk.
Hugh and Nathan dug the grave before sunup, and the sad task of laying Vance to rest was put behind them.
I'm not one to speak ill of the dead, and we don't know that what happened last night wouldn't have happened anyway. so blaming it on Vance gets us nowhere. I believe the bushwhackers would have cut down on you anyway when you left the dance hall. The brawl involving the Harrells just brought it on a mite quicker.
That's how I see it. The Mexicanos took their revenge.
Like I told you before, you can't win by allowing the other side to choose the time and place. I realize a man needs an occasional night in town, but not at the risk of his life. Until this thing with Estrella has been resolved, none of us will ride into Lincoln except in daylight, and then only for necessary supplies.
I see the need for it, but I don't like it. Hell, if we pull in our horns and don't do nothing, that puts us on the defensive.
It appears to, but we're still forcing them to come to us.
Come the dark of the moon, they can sneak in and burn us out. Or in their case, bushwhacking being more their style, they can hole up within rifle range and pick us off one at a time.
The most danger will be at night, but if you're interested, I may have a solution to that.
Speak up, man.
One man, me and my dog, Dusk Till Dawn. We'll work far enough out so that a rider can warn the rest of you we're about to have visitors. That'll give you time to arrange a proper welcome.
By God, that reminds me of Mosby's Rangers. It's a powerful plan, Stone, but it'll be a burden on you with never a night to rest.
Well, the rest of us could spell you, each man taking a different night.
Thanks, but you couldn't count on Cotton Blossom without me. You'll still be doing your share, because I'll need a different rider with me every night. Once we know they're coming, one of you can hightail it back here to set up a reception. Me and Cotton Blossom will be right behind them. When you gents open up, I'll show them what a real honest-to-God crossfire is like. We'll cure that bunch from sucking eggs if it kills them.
Tobe rode with Nathan the first night, and they covered a continuous stretch of 5 miles across a plateau from which any attack must surely come.
I ain't poking holes in your plan, but suppose the varmints takes a long ways around and comes at the ranch from the west.
We can't be sure they won't, but the odds are against it. To begin with, they'd have to ride twice as far, and once in position, they'd have to leave the horses a good 2 miles out. McLean's horse barn is to the west of the house, and almost every night the wind's out of the northwest. Sound carries at night.
You're a thinking man, Stone. You and McLean are a lot alike. But he only knows what he should do, while you have the talent for doing it.
The McLean riders kept to the ranch, and for 6 weeks, nothing happened. The attack came on Saturday night, the 1st of November. Hugh and Nathan were resting their horses.
They're coming. Lead your horse a ways. Have the rest of the outfit fan out, holding their fire till I open the ball. Let the varmints think I'm alone, and when they cut down on me, the rest of you fire at their muzzle flashes. Make every shot count, and don't give them a chance to return fire.
Nathan moved to the south. When the attackers passed him, he would fall back until he was behind them. Nathan paused, listening. They were afoot. Nathan drew his Winchester from the boot and crept back until they were ahead of him, moving toward the clearing they would have to cross. 12 men moved into the open. 2 of the Estrella riders took slugs while the others bellied down and began returning Nathan's fire. He ceased firing and rolled away from his original position. The McLean cowboys began firing at the invaders' muzzle flashes. Estrella's men scampered to the right and left, seeking to escape with their lives.
3 of them are dead, but them Harrells escaped.
Them that got away didn't get off easy. We got some lead in the Sidewinders.
Lincoln, New Mexico Territory, December 1st, 1873. A month after the last attack, Nathan and his companions were jolted from their sleep and poured out of the bunkhouse.
Varmints are coming. 14 of them. And they're fanning out.
We can't set up a crossfire this time. That's spreading us too thin.
We best wait on McLean. He's the boss.
You're damn right I am.
14 men heading this way, sir. And they're splitting up. Some coming at us from the east, the others from the west.
About what I expected. There are 10 of us. I'll take Squid, Riley, Joel, and Tobe, and we'll meet that bunch coming in from the east. Stone, take Hugh, Gus, Will, and Quad, and take the varmints coming from the west. You'll only get one chance to even the odds, so make that first volley count.
The battle lasted only a matter of a few seconds. None of the McLean riders were hit, but Estrella lost two men, one of them Benjamin Harrell.
The Harrells will give us hell now. If nobody objects for the next few days, I'd like to keep watch on the Estrella camp. It's time I had a look at the rest of those Harrells in daylight.
No objection from me. I have a telescope you're welcome to use.
On the fourth day of his vigil, Nathan's patience was rewarded. As he watched from a distance, the three remaining Harrells entered the barn, followed by a fourth man whose back was to Nathan. When the four emerged, they were mounted, and Nathan almost dropped the telescope. The fourth man was Clint Barkley.
Cotton Blossom, we're about to begin a long overdue skunk hunt.
Yeah! Nathan kicked his horse into a fast gallop. Suspecting the Harrells were heading for town, he paced himself so that he might fall in behind and follow them. He intended to wait until Barkley was afoot to force a showdown. The four reined up before the Apache saloon and headed inside.
Cotton Blossom, stay.
Barkley, this is Nathan Stone. You bushwhacked a friend of mine in Texas. You have until the count of five to come out and stand on your hind legs like a man.
But Nathan was denied the showdown for which he had waited so long.
Stone! There'll be no more shooting in this town. I am U.S. Marshal Evan Taylor from Santa Fe. The men who just entered the saloon are under arrest.
Nathan turned to face the lawman and found himself facing six of them. Behind Marshal Taylor stood five Mexicans, each armed with a Winchester.
Marshal, one of the varmints in that saloon is Clint Barkley. He killed a Texas Ranger friend of mine.
I'll have to see proof of that. Now mount up and ride back to the McLean spread. Tell McLean I want no more shooting. Based on what Sheriff Hatcher has told me, the Estrella outfit has instigated all the violence, and charges will be filed.
It's good news if Marshal Evan Taylor can make it stick. Leave this Armijo Estrella loose, and he'll have hired a whole new bunch of killers before the Marshal gets back to Santa Fe.
Now that I know one of the Harrell gang is Clint Barkley, I aim to gut shoot the Sidewinder if I have to bust him out of jail to do it. For that reason, Mr. McLean, I'll be saying adios to you and your boys. From what Marshal Taylor said, Sheriff Hatcher is laying all the blame for the shooting and killing on Estrella and his gun-toters. So when I do whatever I have to do, I won't be riding for you. Bueno suerte.
Hate to lose you, Stone. Anytime you're in these parts, ride in for a howdy and some grub.
All the riders shook his hand and seemed genuinely sorry to see Nathan go. But the thought of the Harrells and Barkley in the Lincoln jail spurred Nathan on. Reaching town, however, Nathan found that the Harrells and Barkley broke jail and rode out as soon as Marshal Taylor left town to take a posse to the Estrella camp. Barkley may have ridden out with the Harrells, but he didn't stay with them long. On the trail to the Estrella camp, he reined up.
This is as far as I go. You damn Harrells are a jinx.
Merritt and his missus ain't gonna like this. What you want us to tell them?
Tell them to go to hell.
Barkley rode at a gallop in the direction of El Paso and the Mexican border.